why don't you put into context exactly what that means, the stopgap funding?
Well, of course, this is sort of the second effort to provide funding. There were some in April and some here. Obviously, it's welcomed in the sense that it helps our institutions stay open into the fall, but it certainly is not the solution. This doesn't help us in terms of being able to plan for an academic year. It leaves us in a state of flux and uncertainty. And even with this funding and the April funding, if you were to look at what the higher ed system received in 15, before all this started, even after that budget was cut toward the end of the year, and you just said, well, let's assume a reasonable budget would be in 16 and 17, we had that 15. So 15 times two. The current amount of money that's been given to our institutions, our universities, is less than half of that. So this is supposed to carry them for 18 months. Then it is good that we've finally paid the bills for the MAP students last year, but there's no certainty for next year. And ISAC, who administers the MAP program, is saying the MAP applications are significantly down. So these are thousands of students who are just deciding, why bother? Why should we go to college? And these are exactly the students that Illinois needs to get to college, because as the IBHE has documented with its data, it's the low-income and students of color that we have these huge gaps for in Illinois. They're the workforce of the future. They're the growth of the workforce. So we're not out of the woods yet by any means. And to be efficient and effective, which we want to be, you have to be able to plan. And so far, we can't plan.
You sound like you're walking a fine line between you don't want to sound ungrateful, but you also don't want to sound satisfied.
You hit it on the head. That's exactly right. And I think our legislative on both sides of the aisle and the governor have said we're not finished yet. And when they'll finish after the November election, I mean, my crystal ball is no clearer than anybody else's. But our hope is that at the very latest, they'll come back after the election and that they will then put in a full budget. I mean, this budget, there's no personnel in this budget. This is just relying on the court orders to continue to pay people. So we are grateful for the funding. It allows institutions to be able to open in the fall and to continue into the fall. But we still have deep concerns, we know, by the accreditors, like the Higher Learning Commission. If anything, a half-year budget, as grateful as we are for getting money so we can stay open, a half-year budget, when they read it at the regional accreditor office, that aggravates the problem. Because they're saying they couldn't even get a full year budget together. Because their creditors are not looking at next semester or even next year. They're saying, are our institutions financially stable to serve students they enroll for 4 or 5 years? And I would not be surprised if we'll continue to garner attention from the regional accreditors in terms of the status of our institutions, given the situation we're currently in. Layoffs, I would predict, will continue in part because institutions not knowing what the spring holds, just in order to prepare, are going to have to continue to think about what would we do if this is it? How would we survive through the spring and go on? So we're still in a pickle, and we are grateful. We are grateful, I'll use that word, for the funding and the bipartisanship to produce the funding. We hope that, as we said in April, when they put even a smaller amount out, we're hopeful that will carry forward and we'll get a real budget. Illinois will do what the other 49 states do, which is pass annual budgets.
Okay. I noticed in April when they passed that stopgap, a lot of college presidents were in attendance. They were in the House gallery. They were in the State House lobbying. This time around, there was a big press conference on Wednesday with the whole gamut, private colleges, community colleges, public colleges. But then on Thursday, people had disappeared. I took that as a sign that they knew a deal had been worked out. They knew things were okay. When did you feel like we are going to get something?
Well, I've learned in this process, what is the phrase, don't count your chickens till they hatch. But we were fairly certain as well. There was a few moments when some disagreements emerged that we worried that maybe this is going to derail it. But ultimately, we felt like also that the deal had been worked out and that K-12 schools were going to be able to open in the fall and that we would get another infusion of funds to help us in the higher ed side to stay afloat further into the calendar year.
Can you talk about how this round of stopgap funding is divvied up among the different schools?
This second round of stopgap funding really provides money across the board to all of our institutions. And the first one provided additional funds, for example, to Chicago State because they were in such dire need. This particular stopgap began to equalize across all the universities the amount of money that they received. The first stopgap had no MAP money. This provided last year's MAP money. you know, it provided funding to the community colleges, and it also provided some operating expense money for agencies like mine, since we need to pay the rent, we need to pay the utilities. So it definitely was a step forward from what the first one. But as I said, it's still nowhere near what needs to be in place. Both of these are kind of, I would call them emergency funding to keep things afloat.
I'm thinking about the message this sends to investors, small and large. By small, I mean families, you know, trying to think where to invest in their children's future. And by large, I mean like bond rating agencies. So what are you hearing on those two ends of the spectrum?
I think the fact that MAP applications are significantly down, that we won't know the final enrollment figures for fall until, obviously, we do all that data and we will have the final reports in fall. But what we're hearing in terms of early indicators from some of our institutions is that enrollments will be down in the fall. It will vary across institutions. Some will have, may grow. Others will be down. But uncertainty for any investor, whether it's a parent investing in a student or an adult learner wanting to come back to school and use their hard-earned money to get back and get a degree, or it's a large-scale, you know, bond investor, uncertainty is never a good thing. No investor likes uncertainty. And we're still in a situation of great uncertainty.
Can you talk about what institutions you're hearing from that might see the lowest enrollment or the biggest decrease in enrollment?
I don't think I want to say that right now, because it's somewhat speculative. There's some early indicators on students making their deposits and things, so we don't really know. But I think one thing I can say, it will vary across the system. There will be some institutions that will perhaps maintain or even grow. There will be others that will decline. But how that will all play out, we'll be able to know once we get the fall enrollment data and we put all that together, which is what we do here at IBHE, and do a fall enrollment report. Then we can begin to really speak to the damage that this uncertainty has created for the system.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Illinois Edition. I'm Dusty Rhodes, and I'm speaking with James Applegate, director of the Illinois Board of Higher Education. State lawmakers recently approved some partial funding for colleges and universities, but higher education is still not a top priority for most lawmakers. Applegate wants to counter their misperception that Illinois schools simply squander students' hard-earned tuition dollars.
We are working right now with our private college leaders, our public college 2 and 4 year leaders, to think about how we can begin to organize a very proactive, positive, I guess I would call it campaign, and once we can get some certainty, to move back out there with our investors, to use that term, the parents, the students, the adults, and talk about why the Illinois higher education system is a good system. It's why they ought to, if they've thought about leaving, they ought to come back. If they're coming, we'll be able to serve them well. I mean, this is not a system that deserves to be blown up. In the most recent national data we have comparing Illinois to other states in higher education shows, for example, that we are third in the country in numbers of community college students who transfer to universities and get 4 year degrees. Our community colleges are in the top 5 in the country for full-time students who start and getting them to degree. If you start at a public or a private 4-year college in Illinois, you have a 9 out of 10 chance of getting a baccalaureate degree within 6 years. We are the best in the country in graduating adult learners once we get them into our colleges. Now, we need about 500,000 more of them in our colleges to meet our workforce needs, but when we get them, we do a good job. So it's a solid system. It needs to improve. That's what we've been working on. You know, we need to be more affordable. We need to close gaps for low-income and students of color. We need to get more adults back to college. And that's what we need to be focusing on, building on our strengths and moving forward. Unfortunately, this last year or so has made that very difficult. But we're trying to get that forward look back in place, because we do need to move forward. Illinois has set a goal to have 60% of its workforce with a high-quality college credential by 2025. By the latest numbers, we're at about 50%. It's doable, but it will take both the state stabilizing funding and investment in higher education over that period and higher ed stepping up and doing even better than what it's currently doing in terms of enrolling and graduating more students at good cost in an affordable way. So I feel like we were on the boat headed for a distant shore, which was 60 by 2025. And in the first year or so I was here, we were trimming the sails, building capacity, figuring out how we move faster and get there. And then somewhere in the middle of the night, someone knocked a hole in the bottom of the boat. And so then our priority had to shift from looking forward to get to the shore to not sinking and drowning. These two stopgap bills help us some, but we still need that stability. And that's why the Illinois Board of Higher Education, in its budget recommendation presented in December of last year to the governor and legislature, called for foundation funding in 17 to stabilize the boat, stop the bleeding, whatever metaphor you want to use, and then bring the higher ed leadership and the state leadership together to create what we're calling the Illinois Higher Education Compact. And a compact is a trusting relationship where the state will publicly commit to do everything it can to stabilize robust funding for higher ed. And higher ed, in exchange for that, will agree to embrace some metrics that we are ready to come forward with around being more efficient, being more effective, having better student outcomes. So we'll commit to making that investment even better, our return on investment even higher. And then we'll set that up for 3 years or a multi-year period, come back and look at how we've done and move forward. We need to get that stability reestablished so people can plan. Any business owner will tell you, if you're living 6 month to 6 month planning, no way able to predict your revenue stream, that's very hard to have a rational strategic plan that makes your business work as efficiently and effectively as you might like it to. The pain I feel personally most about this is for the students, particularly our MAP students. They did everything we asked them to do. They're by definition low income. I think the average income of a independent MAP student is like $16,000-$18,000 a year. The average income of a dependent MAP student who's in a family is around in the low 30s. But they, with all of that, they did everything they were supposed to do. They went to high school, they took the good courses, they got reasonable grades, they scored adequately, they went to college, they're in college, and we told them that we would help them. And now this is throwing all that into question. For those students particularly, I've talked to many of them. It's just painful to hear them. They've already got so many things they're trying to deal with. And we're just adding a very big boulder to their backpack on their path to a college degree. And I just really regret that.